Season 6, Episode 5, Hearts and Souls. It opens up with... Well, I guess I should do a quick disclaimer. Hulu has an edited for TV version. The original version is 1 hour and 4 minutes, and that's the version that this episode will be based on. Figured it out beforehand, so we didn't have to make 2 episodes.
Suck it, Hulu.
Damn it. Hulu needs to get their shit together and figure this out, because it was very frustrating to find this out halfway through watching it and then going
to... Why? I just don't understand why Hulu would only have the 44-minute version, you know?
Especially this episode, even though what they cut out... They basically cut out everything that isn't essential to the main storyline for what's going on. But it's still frustrating, because the only thing I'll say... like the big difference I'll say up at the top, it seems like if you watch the Hulu cut... The people in the office do not care that much about what's going on with Bobby. They're, like, kind of bummed. But if you watch the full version, you're like, oh, they're very invested. They want him to get better. But the Hulu cut, like, cuts around them so much that you barely notice that they're there.
Yeah, there's a whole Metal Boy Martinez situation. Even Kirkendall, even though she's working later, like, there's more her interactions with some of the squad members, like,
there's interesting. There's acknowledgement that they're even there.
There's more of, and you see more of Andy's heartbreak.
Yeah. And there's
realization of Bobby's sickness. You see him, like, you see that play out more, which is interesting.
Yeah. Let's get through it.
So I'll just say this. I'm glad I didn't see the hour version first.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like it would have been worse, like, sadder to see.
It is way sadder to see. I can...
And I feel like now I'm like, desensitized to this episode, where I don't get as sad as I used to be, and I'm like, can get through it.
Mm-hmm. It's brutal. Hope you brought your tissues when you watch this one.
Yeah, because this episode makes you wipe your butt.
So it opens up with Sipowicz, Martinez, and Kirkendall in a hospital waiting room waiting to see Bobby. There's some funny jibs and jabs between Martinez and Sipowicz, because Martinez has got the best spot in the waiting room, I guess.
Andy is such a little bitch.
Yeah, it was real bitchitude, it's pretty sure.
It was very much like second grade shit. And then he's like, oh, I gotta check something, and he steps outside, and so he can, like, sneak in and get closer to Bobby, and then be the person who's like, I was there, I was closer to him.
And yeah, Medavoy shows up a little later than everybody else, and Sipowicz is like, yeah, Martinez showed up at 2 a.m. to get that spot with a pump tent. And I was like, Jesus.
I'm like, yeah, is this dude camping out at Best Buy on Black Friday? Like, what?
You mentioned Sipowicz pretends he has to take a phone call and goes to the payphone, but then just goes down the hallway to see him. And it cuts back to the waiting room, and Martinez is like, you see this guy? You see what this guy's doing?
That's a pretty good Martinez impression, Kirk.
Thank you. I thought
for a second that lunatic Nicholas Totoro was here.
He loves the Yankees, man. He loves the Yankees.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Hey, look, never mind. I was going to be slightly insulting. I was just going to say, if you have nothing else, because nothing really happened after NYPD Blue, might as well be that crazy fan.
Excuse you. You're going to wish you never uttered those words when I hit you with this, bitch. He was in the remake of The Longest Yard.
What?
So,
my
yeah.
God.
So, the Adam Sandler phenomenal movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how could I forget?
Yeah.
How could I forget?
It's he was in the remake of The Longest Yard, so you can apologize now or later, but before you hit the stop button,
and we know
you
the
can issue that apology.
And we know he can just live off the residuals of The Longest Yard in perpetuity, because he must be making tons of money.
I mean, I may be wrong. I may be just guessing this. I think he is one of those guys that, I mean, maybe not like Big Daddy in those movies that we know so well, but I think in some of his later Adam Sandler movies, he was like one of those guys that he would always use in like the background. So if that's the case, then that dude's going to get paid for a while. Because like
that's
Adam
true.
Sandler movies, like for some reason, everyone loves Adam Sandler movies. So
Sipowicz, he's heading down the hall to see Simone, and Simone is, well, he looks like he's gotten better. His wife, Russell, is putting on a button-up shirt slowly, because he's recovering from heart surgery, where he got a heart transplant, and she's taking her time buttoning up the shirt, and he asks, is the band...
Do you think it's kind of, like, oddly poetic that most opening scenes with them was her always taking his shirt off, but now, in this scene, she's putting it on, she's buttoning it up?
Well, I mean, it's also supposed to be very symbolic of, oh, we're getting ready to go home, everything's okay, he's good now, we're putting on a shirt, and we're gonna get out of here, and yeah, it's true, most of the time she's trying to rip those clothes off to bone the man, even when he can't breathe. She mentions that there's she mentions that there's a little bit of drainage. He says, "Oh,
yeah, there is. He's been in the hospital for a while."
He asks if it's wet, if the bandage is wet, and she's like, "No, it's just a little drainage." He's like, "It feels wet." Dr. Swan comes in, is like, "So you guys are looking to get out of here?" And he says, "Absolutely." Russell brings up the drainage, and Swan kind of hesitantly goes, okay, we'll take a look at it. And then he starts unbuttoning the shirt, which kind of sucks, because you know it took fucking forever to get the buttons done.
Yeah. Yeah. Russell was having a struggle to put those buttons on.
They open the shirt, and he gets back into bed on his own power until he has to lay down. And when they look at the bandage, he's like, well, I'm going to have to get a Q-tip and take a look at it. As they go to rip off the bandage, Sipowicz sees Bobby and gives him a wave, and they look at each other. And when he rips the bandage off, they all look at it, kind of shocked and surprised, and Sipowicz kind of even has his own oh shit face. Andy goes back to the waiting room. They're joking about him not listening to the rules, doing whatever he wants, and they say, oh, did you see him? And he goes, he don't look good. And then Russell comes to them a couple seconds later, and says, we're going to have to stay a little while, and if you see the look on Andy's face, it's pretty bad. Like, he already knows that what's going on is not good at all. Russell explains it away, saying, oh, it looks like the wound is infected, they got to take a CAT scan and look at some other stuff, but I'll call you, just go to work, I'll let you guys know. And then they get their coats, and Sipowicz has to take one dig into Martinez again for no reason. He's like, do you want to go back or do you want your spot? And it's like, Jesus Christ.
So in the 44-minute version, they only show
Andy seeing him.
Diane and Simone talking to the doctor, right?
Yeah.
They don't show any of the shit happening between the squad.
Yeah, none of that.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
So yeah, it makes it seem like Andy just showed up. If you watch just the Hulu version, it looks like Andy just showed up at the hospital to see him, and then he takes one look at him and waves, and then walks away because he sees something's going on. But that's it. Like, you don't. There's also like little tiny moments I think cut out with Dr. Swan. Like the edits, because I did kind of the same thing you did, but I watched the full version, then the edited version, then the full version again. There's like, they had to cut out 20 minutes, so there's like little tiny things cut out of every conversation, and then big whole sections of stuff that doesn't involve Simone or Sipowicz. Anyway, that's the beginning of this episode, and this is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. Alright, when we come back, Sipowicz is told by Fancy that his ex-wife is in the bathroom. Sipowicz is like, what the fuck are you talking about? Fancy asks about Bobby, and Sipowicz says, yeah, he looks like he's getting worse.
And then doesn't the lieutenant go, how do you know that?
I don't think he does. He kind of just...
No, that's a different conversation.
Yeah, that's a different combo.
Yeah, yeah.
Sipowicz heads towards the bathroom, and his ex-wife Katie comes out, played by Deborah Monk, who played his ex-wife originally. You might notice her from The Devil's Advocate or The Bridges of Madison County. Or
the TV show Monk.
Well, that's weird. Like, if you go to her IMDb, she's known for Devil's Advocate, Bridges of Madison County, and NYPD Blue, and some Katherine Heigl piece of shit that I've never seen.
What's the Katherine Heigl POS called?
It's like Two for the Money or some other, like, straight to the bin movie.
Wow, someone's not a fan of the Heigl.
Nah, I'm not a big fan of the Heigl. Sipowicz, he runs into Katie, and he's like, "What are you doing here?" And she's like, I just had to use the restroom. He's like, "Yeah, but why are you here?" And she's like, maybe I can come back another time if you're too busy." And he's like, "No, we're going to the coffee room." As they go to the coffee room, Medavoy and Martinez come in, and they're dour as well.
Man, everyone's a little down. Even Dolores at the front checkout.
Sipowicz and Katie.
Katie's drunk.
Yeah, Katie is very drunk, and Sipowicz is like, "Katie, when did you start drinking?" And she's like, "What?"
Okay. Oh yeah. Keep going.
So then he's like,
"I feel like we should explain storylines
separately."
Yeah. Can we just explain like the two small stories real quick, and then do the whole Bobby?
I mean, we can. I figured it would just pack more punch if we go in order, but
that's fine. Because I just have a lot to say about. Like, her whole performance.
Yeah.
And, like, the whole thing. Like, there's a lot of positives there, but there are a few things that happened during the whole thing where I was just like, what is happening?
Well, so
go ahead.
Well, just in this scene with Katie, they walk in and she admits, like, "Oh, I had one small drink because I had to come in the city and talk to you." And he's like, "Oh, okay."
How does that feel? How would that feel, Kirk, if, like, someone came to you? Like, someone you knew really well, had a really intimate relationship with. You guys kind of fell out, but they're like, "Hey, for me to be able to talk to you, I have to have alcohol."
I mean, partially flattered, because they're that willing to talk to me. Also concerned for their well-being.
That's the personality you're trying to cultivate here?
Exactly. Well, he brings her into the room, and he's like, "So what's going on, Katie?" And she's like, "Well, how are things, Andy? How's your new wife?" And I was like, "Okay, that I don't know if what the problem is, but why are you asking that question? Clearly, you came for a specific thing. So what's the thing?" She's like, "Well, I'm in trouble, Andy. I got a DWI in Secaucus." And he's like, "Oh, were you drunk because you had to come see me?" And then says, "Well, then, today's drink was not your first drink." And she's like, "Don't bully me." And it's like, okay, well, you're bringing it up, and you're obviously drunk now. You need to get it together. She said that she had one glass and rolled a stop sign, and then refused to take a test because Sipowicz always told her, "Don't take the test." Which, he probably told you that when he was drunk. Just gonna say that out loud.
Well, that's what I do when I get pulled over hammered.
She says, "Oh yeah, well, you know, I got pulled over." And Sipowicz then says, "Well, did you tell him that you have an ex-husband who's a cop, or did you tell him about Andy Jr.?" And then, of course, I highlighted that and said, "Why would that fucking matter if you're driving drunk?"
Oh, as soon as he said that, I was like, "Didn't Andy Jr. die like 3 seasons ago?"
Yeah.
Like, maybe you can use that excuse 3 years ago, but, like,
now?
3 years, like, I'm not saying it's not hard to get over a child, but, like, is this her first ticket driving drunk? I don't know.
It's also, to me, it's like, you get pulled over for driving drunk, right? And then you're clearly drunk, and you're driving. Hence, driving drunk. And the guy pulls you out, and then you go, hey, you know what? I know that I'm endangering the lives of others and my own life by doing this, but, my ex-husband's a cop, so free pass?
Then, okay, no to the free pass. Okay. My dead son used to be a cop?
He was shot trying to help somebody, so how does that free pass look now? Huh? How are we looking on that free pass?
Like, if we put both of those things together, do they equal one?
Because like, the second you said that, I was like, why would that matter?
But this is why people like fucking hate police and the police force, because like their whole thing is like, we are here to like uphold the laws that society has made and wants everyone to follow, except if those laws affect like my family.
My family's good time.
Or me, then I want to change it. But no, but the, like, you get what I'm saying? That's why, like, but like in this TV show is always trying to like glorify it. It's crazy.
There's another part that I'm going to get to about it that's completely maddening, but
about this storyline?
Yeah.
After because after they talk, Sipowicz goes to get on the phone,
mm-hmm.
and I'm assuming it's Sylvia, correct?
Well, no. He calls the arresting officer first.
That's right.
He asks Katie for the name, or no, he says, when was this? And she says 9 weeks ago, and he's like, 9 weeks? Were you gonna tell me about this? And she says, yeah, well, the trial's this afternoon, and he gets pissed off. He's like, of course he's gonna be pissed off. What is he gonna do in like 3 hours on this day of all days to help you out? He then asks for the papers, and she says, oh, am I embarrassing to stay here? And I just wrote down the quote, Katie, drink your coffee.
Oh, he was done. He was tired of it.
As he goes out to go call this guy, because he has her paperwork, Mitchell Wolf comes in and needs a detective.
Oh, this dude was the worst.
And since Sipowicz is catching, Dolores looks at Sipowicz, and Sipowicz is like, I'm sorry, I have to get my wife out of a DWI. So she walks over to Medavoy and Martinez, and she goes.
Oh, he doesn't say anything to her.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't even acknowledge her.
She recognizes it. No, she recognizes it, and then like smartly doesn't
invite that abuse.
Doesn't bother him. Yeah.
So she walks over to Medavoy and Martinez, who are sulking at their desk or at Martinez's desk. And she says, hey, Sipowicz is technically catching, but he's dealing with his ex-wife. This gentleman needs a detective. And Medavoy goes, what does he want?
Yeah, Medavoy's not having it.
Which is great if, like, you went and you needed a detective for a crime that was committed. Like, God help this man if he was, like, sexually assaulted by a group of people or something. Because that dude's like, hey, I need a detective. And she goes over to Medavoy, who's not really lowering his voice at all, and like, does it seem important?
Yeah.
And she goes, well, he has a bruise over his eye, but I don't know if that's private or not. And Medavoy gets up like, okay, Jesus, I guess I'll do my job today. I guess I came in and clocked in, but okay. And he goes over, because this is where they like layer a scene on top of each other. He talks to Mitchell Wolf, who says, I was attacked by one of my tenant's sons, actually. While Mitchell Wolf is talking to Medavoy, Medavoy says, oh, you want to put in an assault charge for that shiner? Like, and he emphasizes it, like, just for that? And then Mitchell Wolf...
Yeah, he kind of is, like, putting it... He's kind of, like, trying to hint at the guy and, like, push the guy to, like,
just be drop like, it.
Hey, not today, man.
To which I said, I wrote in my notes, okay, have you ever charged somebody with assaulting an officer who hit you that hard? Because I've seen people use assaulting an officer for guys that, like, blow snot on an officer and keep a dude in jail for, like, a night. This dude was hit by another guy. You have no idea how hard he bruises. And you're like, okay, well, did you get hit hard enough? Like, really?
Yeah.
And keep in mind, this dude doesn't know what's going on. It turns out the guy's a piece of shit, kind of. But...
Oh, yeah, the dude ends up being a total dick. But, yeah.
If it was just...
They don't know that.
Yeah, if it was just a guy that was like, no, I was beaten up by a couple of people in my house, and they stole a bunch of shit. Just the idea, like, oh, were you beat up enough for me to care about you? And it's like, well, you're a police officer. Glad you came into work today. I also wanted to point out that Metavoy tries to go for Bobby's chair, and Sipwich just looks at him, so he changes chairs in that moment when he's talking to Mitchell. He, like, grabs Bobby's chair, and then Sipwich is just like, nah, with his eyes, and he gets a different chair. At this point, Sipwich gets a hold of the cop, and he says, oh, wow, you got all the paperwork in before she even mentioned that she was married to a cop, which is like, why would that matter again?
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything.
And then he says, look, I'm going to be honest with you. We had a son who was on the job in New Jersey who got killed. So if she was drinking, it was probably because of that. Anyway, are you going to be upset if I talk to the prosecutor? So I understand that criticizing this man at this point probably isn't cool. But what Sipwich essentially did here is he said, hey, so here's something that's going to make you feel real bad for both of us. Now, are you going to be the dick that tells me I can't talk to the prosecutor? Like, he didn't open up that conversation with, oh, I'm going to talk to the prosecutor. He opened up the conversation with, by the way, we have a dead son, and I'm going to go talk to the prosecutor. He didn't need to give that information up, but he did, and then said, do you have any problem with me trying to get this reversed because I'm a cop?
Yeah, it was like, it's like, I understand that he's, like, upset in a weird space. He's got a lot going on, and he's got to take care of the fact that, like, you know, Bobby's dying, his ex-wife has shown up, and now she's drinking, he's got to deal with it. Like, he's got all these emotions, and, like, he's literally being a dick to everybody, and then realizing, like, but it's cool. He's like, you're cool if I do this to also make it look bad on you, right? Like, because him going to the prosecution and, like, basically trying to get the case tossed is going to hurt that cop's credibility and his, like, arrest record and rate and stuff. Because then people are going to be like, that prosecutor may be, like, not want to deal with his arrests anymore. Because what if there's something tied behind it, you know? So he's already fucking over him over again by calling the prosecution to get this case taken care of.
And just to compare it to a different situation, if Sipwich was, like, a high-ranking, like, public official or rich dude in the city, and just called the dude and said, hey, so my wife didn't mean it, could you just drop it? And the guy said no, and he's like, okay, well, I'm gonna use my power and influence. The cop would then go to his buddies and be like, I can't believe this motherfucker's gonna get off. This is bullshit. But when Sipwich calls and says, I'm on the job, we had a son on the job who died, now that cop is going to go to his buddies and be like, well, you know what, misunderstanding. It's like, no, it wasn't. No, it isn't. It's not a misunderstanding. Yeah, it's not a problem.
Not even close to a misunderstanding.
So it's, you know.
Like, nowhere close to a misunderstanding. Like, we have no, so if you're watching, so we're supposed to be watching this as, like, a viewer, right? So all we know is what we see.
Mm-hmm.
We have no frame of reference other than that, like, she lost Andy Jr., to, like, what's going on with her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have to, like, I just assume that whatever's going on, like, she's 100% at fault for.
Yeah, we also don't know.
Because we're just being giving information, and she's giving us this information, and the information is, like, she ran a stop sign drunk, and didn't tell Andy until, like, the day of, and is drunk talking to Andy early in the morning. So it's like, yeah, like, everything I'm supposed to, like, take from this is, like, it is her fault. So why are we working so hard to, like, help this lady?
It's also because she's the one giving us the information. We have no idea how drunk she was. She could have been fucking smashed when she got arrested. She could have rolled the stop sign and went into a bush, for all we know. And then someone's calling, like, hey, so her husband's on the job. For all we know, that dude on the other end's like, did she tell you she flipped the car?
Yeah. Did she tell you she ended up in the ravine?
Like, did,
like,
she?
Shit like that, you know?
So, anyway, between that call and the next call, which is to Sylvia, we see that Katie just bounces. Just bounces the fuck up out of there.
Yeah, is that a thing? Is that a thing drunks do?
Just, what, get really good at sneaking? They become, like, hide-and-seek champions?
No, are they just, like, is it a thing for, like, them if they're drunk and something gets awkward for them to just, like, leave a situation?
I think it depends on the person's personality. Katie, I mean, we could talk about Katie's personality for a while. It seems like she's working under the assumption that she's embarrassing, She has a lot of shame about what's happening, and she doesn't want anyone to know. And Sipwith seems to have gotten his life together as her life is falling apart. So she's like, he's the only person that could help me, but he's going to see how bad things are, and maybe I could just get it together enough for him to not notice, but she obviously can't. So that's probably why she bounced. She just had a lot of shame to get real serious about it. But
I was just, that was something, because, like, you know, they were trying to portray something that was happening, like something that people go through all the time. So I was just wondering if that was like a trait of, like, an alcoholic.
Yeah, I think that was just kind of like her way of dealing with it. It's just like, I need to get out of here. So then Sipwith calls Sylvia, and he is very aggressive towards Sylvia immediately.
Yeah, all she does is ask, like, reasonable questions.
He calls and he's like, do you know anybody in Secaucus? Or anybody in prosecution in Secaucus? And he's like, no, I don't know anything other than what I already told you. He's getting sicker and they kept him. And then he's like, well, my ex-wife took a DWI in Secaucus, and I'm trying to keep her out of a jackpot. So in between having you talk about my tone, I would like to help her out. So do you know anybody in Secaucus? And then, like, and then there's, like, a pause, and he just goes, thanks, and hangs up.
Yeah.
Metavoy's still talking to that Wolf, Mitchell Wolf piece of shit. And he's like, do you think this is a good idea to get your future rent on time? And the dude's like, I'm in the business school at NYU. I'm just watching this building for my uncle, so I don't give a shit.
Kirk, please put some respect on it. It's the Stern School of Business.
Mm-hmm. The Stern School of Business.
If anyone at Stern heard you say that, they would...
Oh, are they going to come at me? Hey, guess what, Sternheads? The only Stern I care about is Daniel Stern. Okay? So, get your shit together. Come at me. I dare you.
Yeah, so the dude's a dick. Like, and I really liked... I don't know the actor's name. I didn't put that much, like, effort into it, but...
The guy who played Mitchell Wolf.
I liked his portrayal of the character he was playing. I think he did a pretty good job. And he had a pretty good vision with it. I enjoyed it.
If you watch the Hulu version, that guy's not even in it. You see him in the background, but yeah, he has no lines in the Hulu version whatsoever.
Yeah, his whole thing's not even a storyline.
Sipowicz goes to talk to his wife after Mitchell Wolf gives him the pertinent documents. Gives Metavoy the pertinent documents. Sipowicz goes to find his wife, and she's not there, and he looks around, and he's like, son of a bitch. And he runs into Fancy's office, and goes, I need lost time. And Sipowicz screams, I need lost time. And Fancy's like, okay. Like, Fancy is just as dour as everybody else. And Sipowicz screams at Fancy, I need to find my rummy ex-wife. And then Fancy doesn't say anything, and he's like, I need the cellular phone. And he runs in and just grabs it. And as he's walking out to leave, he sees Dolores putting another note on Bobby's desk, and Sipwitz looks at the desk. He's like, I got the cell phone in case my wife calls or you hear anything on the other front, and then he leaves. Mitchell,
what
then...
What did she put on Bobby's desk? It was just a note, right?
Yeah, it was a note on a stack of notes. It looks like...
Why would you keep putting notes there?
That is...
You know what I'm saying?
It's for a visual point, obviously, but that made no sense to keep putting notes at that desk.
You know what else makes a visual point? Taking those notes and putting them into, like, a folder or an envelope that's labeled, like, notes for Bobby. notes for Detective Simone.
You know what also works? If she wrote another note and announced to the entire squad... Another note for Bobby, whenever he gets back. Got another one. Got another Bobby note.
On the chalkboard where they have all the names and shit of, like, who's catching and whatnot. Uh-huh. She just said in the little corner has a tally.
Another note for
Bobby's
Bobby.
Note. She just keeps putting little marks in there.
How fucked up would it be if, like, they had a running joke? Well, they would never do it. But the idea that Dolores doesn't even know what's going on. And she gets another note. She's like, "Man, when Bobby decides to come back to work, we got all these notes for him. Jesus Christ!" Like, just I guess he's
like
taking
the scenes between her and John could have been like John being like, "What? Why is everyone so down?" And her being like, "I don't know. Like, Bobby hasn't been at work either. Like, I don't know what's going on. Like, he just like stopped showing up." It's like super unprofessional. I used to look up to him and everything. And
oh man! As Sipowicz leaves, Mitchell corrects Medavoy's spelling on the guy that hit him, and Medavoy starts laughing. And the guy's like, "What's so funny? What's so funny?" And then Medavoy's like, "Nothing, sir. Let's just finish up your complaint." And he's like, "I guess we don't share the same sense of humor." And Medavoy goes hard on a motherfucker. And tells him, "I guess I really don't care. Let's fill out your complaint about how you got hit once so far over dunning this guy's mother for her rent." And then Medavoy goes back to old school Medavoy and just chills there as finishing his paperwork. The next scene. We cut to the hospital, and Swan comes to Russell. And says, "Hey, Bobby's on his way back. We had the CAT scan and we cleaned up the wound." And he says, "Before I say anything else, I want to say a couple things. One, we've been through a lot. And two, this isn't a time to weaken our resolve." And she's about to ask some questions and Bobby shows up. And Bobby is, he's tweaking. He doesn't look very good. His eyes are darting all over the place. He says he has trouble breathing and that he's very hot, like he has a fever. Swan says that they cleared out the pool of infection. There's a pretty aggressive infection that has taken hold that we need to act on aggressively with antibiotics. And this is another thing I wanted to talk about this episode. I don't think we'll ever explain it enough. Russell just keeps repeating, "That's why you had the antibiotics, right? That's why you're putting on the antibiotics. Antibiotics is what we're doing. That's why we're doing the antibiotics." And Swan keeps saying, "Yes, that's why we're doing the antibiotics. It's supposed to help with that." When Bobby mentions that his breathing is worse, he says, "Yeah, you're probably labored after the
procedure."
And he says, "So my breathing is getting worse?" He's like, "It just seems like it's getting worse. Also, you're probably hot due to the infection and us trying to get it with the antibiotics." He mentions that he also has a urinary infection, which he forgot to mention to Russell. And then Bobby has a straight-up seizure. And, of course, seizures look horrific, especially if you don't expect them. And Swan tells Russell to step out of the room. He tells a nurse to get a certain amount of medication to stop it. He looks at Russell and says, "We're going to get better. I'm putting this into him so he doesn't hurt himself." And Russell's just outside, crying in the hallway, and eventually they get Russell to calm down. I mean, not Russell. They get Simone to calm down from the seizure, and Russell says to nobody, "I want Dr. Carreras. He was better when Dr. Carreras was here." And this is the beginning of what I like to call, "I don't want Russell looking after me when I'm in the hospital."
Oh, really? This is what I call laying the groundwork to ask Russell out on a date in, like, 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, spoiler...
This should be entitled, How to Successfully Kill a Woman's Boyfriend So You Can Bang Her Later On.
Dr. Carreras has the Carrera system, and I don't know all the points, but it involves murdering their current husband and then dating them afterwards. And we don't need to put that at the end of the episode because we know that Bobby is gonna die if you've watched this episode.
Yeah, okay, I'm glad. I was waiting. I was waiting for you. You steer this train.
Yeah.
So I was waiting for you to put it out there that, you know, this was happening. If you watch the hour-long version, they let you know from the minute it starts that this is a Bobby Simone farewell, thanks for everything episode.
Yeah, because they have
the first 5 minutes is a hit after hit of Bobby Simone.
Yeah, it's a sizzle reel. Yeah. It's the best of Bobby Simone previously on NYPD Blue. It's five. You're right. It's like five full
to
minutes.
The moment he meets Andy, to the moment like he's basically like going into the hospital. Like some of his best interrogation scenes, some of his best conversations with Diane, some of his worst conversations with Diane.
Yeah,
everything. It was great. It was like they're letting you know from the jump, like it's goodbye.
And since we don't have to put this at the end of the episode, Dr. Carreras has set up a foolproof concrete foundation to take this woman. She thinks this guy is basically the medical god because he showed a little bit of interest in what they're doing.
Not only, it wasn't just that, it was just on coincidence. On coincidence, when Bobby first went in and was doing really bad, when Carreras had like first got him, Carreras got him to get a little bit better. He didn't heal Bobby or anything. He just got Bobby stable enough to be able to like talk, be able to like, you know, understand what's going on and like be there and be functional. And that's all he did. He like did the bare minimum of his job, but she's treating him like if he shows up, he'll just touch him like Jesus and it'll all be good.
Yeah, she has this opinion that Bobby is better when Dr. Carreras is around, which is a false equivalency and very immature and stupid, and leads to one of my least favorite scenes, I think, of Russell ever, which we'll get to in just a second. Because the next scene also kind of highlights that this is definitely the end of Simone. After she says that Dr. Carreras was better when he was here, Sipowicz comes back to the house, and Sylvia is there waiting for him with information about...
Oh, yeah.
And when Sipowicz gets there, she says, hi, and he goes, hi. She's like, where did you find her? He's like, there's a lot of gin mills in the city. If she had a bottle in her purse, she probably is already over the bridge. Sylvia says, when did she start drinking? And Sipowicz says, this line kind of killed me the first time I saw it. Sipowicz kind of like glassy, just looks straight and goes, I don't know, Sylvia. I don't know nothing about nothing. And then he like walks to the window. And I wrote, Sipowicz is clearly breaking up. Sylvia mentions, do you remember Jerry Hennessy? And he's like, yeah. He works in Secaucus, and Sipowicz very quickly is like, can he help her? She's like, yes, he mentioned if she goes into a program, isn't arrested for a year, they'll expunge the record. They'll expunge the charge, but she'll still get 2 points on the license. And he says, thank you, and thank him for me. And then Andy starts to really lose it, because he's like, all I didn't do for her, she was taking care of that boy, and before him, me, and now she has no one to take care of. She has the pension from the phone company. And then he says, and also with him being sick, I never thought I would have a friend, and now he's dying. And Sylvia tries to comfort him, and she's like, you don't know that he's going to die. And Sipowicz says, he told me in his eyes.
Yeah, that was a really good scene.
I want to... I'll wait till the end. Because it made me realize something on the third watch that kind of... that fucked me up a little bit. His ex-wife calls, which kind of stops him from basically losing his entire shit in the office. And he picks up the phone. He's like, where are you, Katie? Stay there. And Sylvia says, go ahead. And Sipowicz slowly walks out of the room. Like, he's so defeated and, like, doesn't want to deal with any of this right now, but he has to. The next scene... this is one of my least favorite Russell scenes of all time. Simone is on oxygen, and Swan comes in as Russell is like watching him like a hawk. And Swan says, he's in this state. It happens after a seizure. We'll get him better. I wanted to talk to you about the second CAT scan. And Russell is like beyond dismissive. She's like, yeah, cool, whatever. Yeah, cool. He's like, I want to discuss the second CAT scan with you. And she's like, not until Carreras gets here. He's like, I'm pretty sure Dr. Carreras would defer, because it's my fucking job.
Yeah, he basically says, like, look, I can bring Dr. Carreras here, but, like, one, I have seniority, and two, this is my specialty, so he can kind of lick my nuts.
And
she goes, no, not till he's here. Not till this little fucker shows up. And it's like, okay, it's like, she should be charged with murder.
or reckless endangerment.
Yeah, yeah.
Murder.
Like, well, just be charged with, like, being a... Just be charged with, like, can we charge someone for just being a dumbass? Like, that would be good. That would be great.
Will she have to get her delegate? Were you being...
Martinez busy.
Were you being a dumbass? Okay, but let's... I want to talk about this. So then he gets down on, like, his knees, or, like, he squats down to get eye level with her. And he's like...
Yeah, he's got to get on her level. He's got a reason with her.
And he goes, look, Bobby has an abscess. It caused the seizure. And she's like, why would an abscess cause the seizure? He's like, it's in his brain, Diane. He's like, I want to get a neurologist.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to tell you why, but you won't.
Listen.
You are in that weird headspace and are being a lunatic.
And he says, I'm going to try and get a neurologist's opinion here. And she's like, not until Dr. Carreras gets here. And he's like, it's not his expertise. And she's like, does expertise matter? And he goes, of course it does. And she's like, don't you raise your voice. Like, you're the one raising voices, bitches. Like, you're the one raising the voice. Like, he was like.
She definitely plays that, like, white woman card.
Oh, my God.
Like, she gets it to a certain place. And then she's like, don't you dare take it to that place. It's like, but you yelled. Like, your voice got higher before me.
You also, what you said, by the way, Russell, what you just said to a doctor was, hey, does the expertise in parts of the human body matter when trying to save a life? To which he responded, yeah. Yeah, it kind of matters.
I don't know. If I had to have brain surgery, I don't think I'd want a fucking doctor. Just putting that out there. Does that foot doctor know something about the brain? Yes. Does he know as much as the guy who works on brains all the time? No. So, you know what I mean? Like, oh, God, dude.
And fun fact, if he fucks up your foot, guess what you can get? A new foot made of wood or steel. You can't get a new brain. Those are kind of... They make one for you. So you're... Oh, my God. So
yeah, those are kind of game changers.
So
those are kind of game changers. And another thing, like, maybe this is just me, maybe it only happened one other time, but I felt that any time Diane tried to say Dr. Carreras' name, she kept Carreras differently.
Yeah, she said Carreras,
like,
differently.
She would say Carreras, but, like, it was never consistent. Like, maybe it's because she was supposed to be, like, emotional and crying and shit, but, like, it was bugging the fuck out of me. She did it a lot in this scene, especially when she was trying to be like a stubborn little brat, and she was like, no, not until Dr. Carreras is here. Well, when Carreras gets here, we'll talk about it. It's like, is it Carreras or Carreras, bitch? Like, you should know this if you wanted, like, you love him so much. Like, you're about to take his, you're like, in 3 years, you're about to marry him and take his name. So, like, fucking, how do you say it right?
She also says, don't steamroll us, which I felt like he's been trying his best to talk at her level and get her on board. He then goes, I can see you're upset. We'll wait till he gets here and put our heads together. And he leaves the room. And she, like, the look on her face kind of gives the attitude of, like, she felt she won that. I was like, you look like a bitch right now. Like, if I saw that happen as a third party, I'd be like, what is wrong with her? Like, the dude is dying in front of you. Like, you need to start listening to the dude whose job is to take care of him. And
no, I'm a hunt, like, Kirk, this is a battle that I have been discussing on this podcast for a long time, and that for some reason these detectives think that they know more than trained doctors.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, okay, so, like, when that whole expertise thing happened, I was like, I get, like, the whole expertise argument, like, it, like, blew me away that she said something like that, because I thought, like, if someone had a problem, like, that needed to be solved, like, a crime, right? Mm-hmm. And they were, like, dealing with Sipowitz and Diane, and then were like, you know what? I don't want any of you to help me. I want fucking Shannon up here. I want one of the uniformed cops. I want them to take the rein on this. Like, you guys, like, and then, like, Sipowitz and Diane could be like, yeah, but we have the expertise. Like, expertise, does that really matter here?
Does expertise really matter at the police station?
Does expertise in catching criminals fucking matter here? I don't think it really does. So, go get me Shannon, and go get me Martens, too, and let's go get this taken care of. It's just really funny. But she should be charged with murder.
Thank you for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. This is a part one. I know I said at the beginning it wouldn't be a part one and part two because of difference in episodes. It's a part one and part two because we literally recorded for 2 hours when we did this episode. So to make it easier on me, make it easier on you, it's going to be two separate parts. So check out part two, two Tuesdays from now. If you want to follow us on social media to know when the episodes are coming out, even though it's usually every other Tuesday, it's Asher Brothers Podcast on Instagram at Asher Bros Pod on Twitter. Also, you can follow the show on the major podcast platforms. There's Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. You can also always check out AsherBrothersPodcast.com to listen to them. If you can, please rate and review the show on whichever platform has ratings and reviews. It's how people see the show. And more importantly, check out NYPD Blue. It's on Hulu, but some of those episodes are edited. So I recommend the DVDs if you can purchase them. But either way, keep watching. And also, keep wearing a mask and social distancing. Peace.